But in the end, it's a fifth straight loss for the Vancouver Canucks in a city where the heat is already turned up about as high as you can do it. They fall again, 4-2 to the Avalanche. Canucks fall to 5-10-2. And the search for answers will continue as Darcy Kuemper and his teammates celebrate a win here at Rogers Arena.
John Shorthouse with the call. Another day, another loss for the Vancouver Canucks. Shorty just told you, 4-2 last night at the hands of the Colorado Avalanche. Better effort against Colorado last night than last week when Vancouver was beaten soundly 7-1. That kicked off the disastrous three-game road trip. You know, the Canucks had a 2-1 lead in the third in this one. Tucker Poolman, his first, in one of the more bizarre goals you see, puts it on net. Darcy Kuemper ends up both kicking and then swatting it in with his blocker. And then the penalties started. Chase on elbowing Jack Johnson. Quinn Hughes, we talked about this with Elliot, the hit on Samuel Girard. Skating the length of the ice to cross-check him. Kadri scores. Cale Makar scores. Gabriel Landeskog. Colorado 3-for-5 on the power play. Once again, the Vancouver Canucks surrender multiple goals on the PK. Vancouver has a NHL worst penalty kill, 60.3%. How do you do that? Two more games on this homestand. Friday, they'll play Winnipeg, who will have played Edmonton the night before. Sunday, they'll play the Hawks, who themselves would have played the evening before against the Edmonton Oilers. I don't want to say that anything's a given, but it does line up for Vancouver to win a couple of games here before they head out once again. Canucks record 5-10-2. Pleased to be joined, as always, by Thomas Strands from the Canucks Hour and The Athletic as well. First of all, good morning, Thomas. How are you?
I'm doing well. It is raining in Vancouver, and the sky is also falling. Par for the course, Jeff.
I'm just thinking about all morning, like, okay, how am I going to approach this one with Drancer? Like, we all watched last night. Like, that's the thing about last night. Like, it's the first game of the night. You know, everything is about the West Coast last night. So everyone in the East gets their paws, and, you know, around 8:30, watch the pregame, 8:30 East, and then 9 o'clock Eastern, we're watching the Vancouver Canucks and the Colorado Avalanche. And first 10 minutes, it's, oh, man, this continues. And then Vancouver turns it around after that four-shot sequence in front of Darcy Kuemper, and then they turn in a good period and a half. And then in the third, it all unravels. I want to get to the game in a second, but give us a sense of the rink. Because we saw the signs, the thanks, Jim, fire Benning, you know, choose, you know, was it choose either Benning or the fans? Like, we saw all of this. And you pointed out on Twitter there was, you know, at times faint, and then it got a little bit louder, the fire Benning chants as well. Take us into the rink last night, Drancer. What was it like?
One of the oddest vibes that I've ever experienced, to be totally honest. Because, you know, it was on the verge of antagonism throughout, but ultimately ended up being more subdued than antagonistic. And I think largely because of the performance the Canucks put in. You know, fans aren't necessarily prepared to boo when their team is carrying play. Like, as mad as you are, right? If your team is down one and carrying play, you know, yeah, your natural inclination is to support them. So there were Go Canucks, Go fans chants. You know, it seemed like the drum, the mascot has a drum that he bangs to sort of key the Go Canucks Go chants. Like, I'd say that I heard it a lot more yesterday than I usually do, which suggests to me that game presentation was pretty aware of the dynamic. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the fact is that the game didn't lend itself to showing the type of negativity that some in attendance wanted to show. And nonetheless, there was a small, super vocal minority of ticket buyers and customers and season ticket holders who were intent on making their dissatisfaction known and also on making sure that it was pointed toward the apex of the organization, right? This was not criticism of the coach. This was not criticism of the underperforming players. And there are legion of them in Vancouver right now. This was, you know, directed specifically at the general manager. And more concerning, also at ownership, right? There were some sell the team signs. There were sell the team chants in concourse. This was, you know, reflective of a mood that's been growing among Canucks fans. Like, I heard you and Elliot talking in the joke that this is all unfolding in slow motion, like the movie, like, no, right?
But yeah,
almost to me, it's more like Roadrunner physics, where Wile E. Coyote runs off the cliff. We know he's run off the cliff. He doesn't know he has run off the cliff yet. He hasn't fallen yet. He has time to notice, then break the fourth wall, then his body goes, and then his eyes, right? And it's just this long, drawn-out sort of sequence. You know, it feels like that. It's like the fans have been so frustrated for so long, and fair enough. This is the fifth worst club by, you know, point percentage in the NHL since 2015, right? Like, and in addition to that, at no point has there been discipline in tearing it down to rebuild. It's been a team that's actually been, you know, signing big name free agents throughout that time, spending to the cap throughout that time. And, you know, it's completely understandable why fans are fed up. And Jim Benning speaking to the media today at 11 a.m. And, you know, I'm sort of thinking about it in advance. There's nothing he can say. There's nothing that can be said at this point by the organization. There's no Francesco Aquilini Twitter thread that can address this, right? These changes have been, or the credibility that the organization has lost with fans in this market has been so long coming that, you know, it's going to take action. It's going to take wins to satisfy it or mollify it in any meaningful way.
You know, to the previous point, and I do like that the Roadrunner analogy as well. I mean, this is all unfolding slowly before everyone's eyes. We all see where this is eventually heading, and, you know, Winston Churchill, you know, talking about, you know, the Russian Revolution during World War One, said the biggest problem was her ship went down within sight of port. Like, we all see this coming, right? Like, we all see this heading there, which is why I think many people wonder, you know, if it's all heading there inevitably, what's the holdup to maybe see what happens on this homestand, because there's a shot to win a couple of games before scrambling out of town? Like, at a certain point, it's one, it's the players, two, it goes to the coach, three, it goes to the general manager, and then at a certain point, doesn't it go all the way right up to the very top? And are we there yet?
Well, I think we are in terms of what matters, right? I mean, there were meetings this week. Those meetings leaked. I think in large part, Jim Benning meeting the press today is to, you know, remove the fact that players and the coach have had to answer for that, right? Without any comment from the organization at this point, right? Like, I think that's sort of a precipitating explanation for why the general manager is going to be facing the fire today, right? Is that someone else has to, right? Someone outside the traveling party or the regular traveling party kind of has to answer for the high level concerns that the organization is far too publicly working through. But, you know, I'm actually, and always fun to do these hits with you, Jeff, as a fellow student of history, but I'm also reminded of another Churchill quote, this one on the erstwhile American democracy, right? Which is that they'll do the right thing after having exhausted all other options, right?
Correct.
That's sort of what it feels like. That's sort of where it feels like Canucks ownership is, right? I mean, if something was going to happen quickly, if there was going to be meaningful accountability for this 5-10-2 start, if the, you know, voice of the dissatisfied within this market was going to be heeded promptly, that would have happened. Like, that would have happened in the wake of high-level organizational meetings designed to understand why this club has struggled. The fact that it hasn't is already a decision, right? It's a decision to at least see if the current leadership group, and Travis Green was just extended 6 months ago, right? Jim Benning finished seventh in the Canadian division last year and was given another look, right? To see if they can get through this, right? To see, can we get through this before making changes? Can we buy ourselves some time, right? And, you know, I think the market's pretty, like, there's no patience left. There's no patience left. And to make the matters worse, the organization can't ask for it because they themselves didn't conduct themselves with any patience this offseason. I mean, I think about the situation last year where Jim Benning, again, had to give a very similar availability in a very similar set of circumstances last January and February, right? And one of the comments that he made there was, you know, I think we're a couple years away. And it made sense. Like, that was the right thing to say. He was exactly dead on with how the Canucks were positioned in terms of some of the inefficient money at the bottom of their books. But fans didn't want to hear it from him, right? They couldn't hear it from him. And so there was rage in the market for about a week. But then this offseason, the Canucks offloaded all of that money. Like, they didn't even stick to their own patient timeline. So it's mm-hmm. going to be pretty hard for them to come out and say, you know, we just need some time here. They're out of it. They're out of it in the minds of this fan base. And because they've stuck with, after a dismal season last year, after the club took a major step back following the bubble, after every single unrestricted free agent in the fall of 2020 departed the organization, right? After mm-hmm. all of that sort of unfolded, like, they're out of time to ask for much of anything from this fan base. And this fan base is completely out of tolerance for, you know, the dreck that this organization has far too frequently served up for the better part of a decade.
I want to ask you at some point here this morning, what do you think the rest of this season should be all about? But before we get there, I want to ask you about Elias Pettersson. Mm-hmm. And there's the Anaheim game, and I've focused on that one play where he's right in front of John Gibson and Elias Pettersson from a couple of seconds ago. It's a shoulder fake and a red light goes off, or he snaps it in quickly. But instead, yeah, it became maybe the easiest poke check of John Gibson's career. Last yeah. night, there was a play at the blue line where he tried to get a little bit cute and spun around, ended up putting himself in the Vancouver Canucks offside. And that's mm-hmm. a play that a really high-skilled player like himself makes in his sleep. Ultimately, the question is, what's wrong with Elias Pettersson? I don't know how to ask it in any more creative way than what's wrong with Elias Pettersson right now.
Yeah, and it's hard to answer without sort of just pointing out that it looks bad, right? Like, it looks bad. The only positive thing that I can say, and I'm reluctant to do it because I've fallen into this trap a couple of times. I see a couple of good shifts, a couple of strong forechecks, you know, some decent work. I see a goal. I see a nice play dissecting a penalty kill. And I think, you know, that's progress. He's taking a step in the right direction, right? But then the next game happens and it's inconsistent again. Or there's a really simple, you know, area pass that Pettersson usually makes, you know, 10 times out of 10 that he just completely fumbles, and the outcome is the same. The Canucks don't get enough from their top six and they lose again. So, you know, at some point, we're now 17 games into the season. At some point it becomes more than just rust. It becomes more than just a guy, you know, who had a pretty significant wrist injury just about 7-8 months ago and didn't play in a high level game for, you know, a long stretch from March to October, who missed camp as he negotiated that second contract. Like, it becomes a bigger thing. It becomes something that's completely inexplicable. With Pettersson, you know, we're looking at a guy who played 185 games, including a point per game run through the bubble playoffs, right? At 0.9 points per game, right? A super rarefied air. There's like 17 players over the last 30 years who've accomplished that in their first three seasons in the league. And it's mostly a list of like the best players of the last 17 years. It's mostly like Forsberg, Malkin, Crosby, McDavid, right? Like, it is not a standard list of players. The worst player on the list, Jeff, is Paul Stastny. Guy played 1,000 games, has 800 career points. Like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe he's not at that level, but he's a bona fide first line center for a decade. Mm-hmm. You know, players who do what Pettersson has done in his career for as long as he did it in his first three seasons, their players are a consequence. They don't forget how to play. But what we're seeing in terms of the competitiveness, in terms of the body language, in terms of the production, in terms of the form, you know, it looks nothing like what he's shown us previously. And, you know, it's certainly among, if not chief among, I mean, luckily the penalty kill is literally on fire for the Canucks, because that's the primary concern, but it's definitely the secondary concern, because it is and speaks to, you know, this team's lack of identity. The fact that they're not generating nearly enough threat, generally speaking, 5-on-5 or on the power play, with significant knock-on effects down line, down the roster as well, just because their first line's not even controlling play regularly enough.
Yeah, that penalty kill, I mean, it almost feels automatic. I can almost feel what it must feel like.
I know.
Sense what it feels like in the building and up and down that bench as well. Like, oh man, we just, like, it feels like, okay, here it comes. Just, we'll take our medicine. flashpoint moment last, what's that?
Well, no, if, you know, there were a couple of sequences in the first where, like, Tyler Myers pretty blatantly interfered with a player. Or that right before the first in the neutral zone, there was another, you know, pretty blatant interference call, and it went uncalled. Now, you know, I think the officiating went against the Canucks a couple times late in the game. But in the first, anyway, I was like, are the refs taking pity on these guys? Especially after that first Avalanche power play goal where, yeah. You know, it wasn't just that they gave it up. It was also that, you know, they narrowly missed a backdoor tap in into an open net. Then they hit the post two, three seconds later. Then they scored. And it was just like, oh, my goodness. Like, it's hard to be as bad as the Canucks have been on the penalty kill. I actually wonder, like, if you let the other team randomly select, or not randomly, but targetedly select the four players they wanted to be out on the ice to start the PK, would you be worse than the Canucks? I don't know. You know, I honestly think they're at a level that's inexplicable, whether it's personnel or coaching. Like, you know, this at this point feels like an act of God in the building.
32nd in the NHL. Let me ask you about a flashpoint last night. And this one, like, I understand being frustrated. I understand being fouled and wanting to do something about it. But read the moment, right? Hughes on Girard last night. I get it. I understand he's upset. I understand the hit. I understand a lot about what's going through Quinn Hughes's mind at that moment. But given what's happening with the team, and, you know, the losing streak and not wanting to put your team on the penalty kill again, still making that choice. Yep. I don't know. Elliot and I were talking about it. You can tell that A, he's frustrated, B, that he's a gamer and he's playing hard, but that is so completely not Quinn Hughes that I don't even know what to say about it, Transfer.
Yeah, it was very much not part of anything he's shown us in his not just his NHL career either, his hockey career, right? It was but, you know, I do think the accumulation of frustration, right? I mean, you know, you're playing the Avs, right? You're playing the guy who you felt was your peer during the Calder, during your Calder season, your Calder eligibility. It's going against you. You see what that team can do, even though they were off last night. I mean, you can see the way they transition the puck, the way they generate off the rush, the way they actually generate rush chances. There are times, even though the Avs played poorly yesterday, you know, where it looked like they're playing a different sport than the Vancouver Canucks do. You know, Makar has the big second season. He's a Jack Adams nominee. So's Adam Fox, who actually wins it. Sorry, did I say Jack Adams? A Norris nominee. Fox, who actually wins it. So your fellow nominees have both now, you know, been up for major hardware. They've been signed for $9 million plus, right? Your team's kind of bad again, right? Bad again. And, you know, you take that hit. This Canucks team, you know, there's not a lot of pushback on in the lineup, right? They're pretty small up front. And they're pretty undermanned talent wise on the back end. You know, it all accumulates, right? You hear the boos, you hear the sort of atmosphere in the rink. You know, I think it all just snowballed and he just had a moment, and I don't think it's a moment we'll see from him repeatedly. You know, obviously it's a moment where he answered for it. He put his hand up, he took responsibility post game. I don't think it reflects who he is. I do think it reflects where this team is at more than anything. And probably where the player's level of frustration is as well. And, you know, our Sportsnet colleague Ian McIntyre asked him about the responsibility post-game, the responsibility that the players feel for the heat, the fire, the pressure surrounding Travis Green and Jim Benning. And, you know, you've spoken to Quinn Hughes enough. You know who he is. Like, he's a very chill person, right? Like, he's a very relaxed personality. And, you know, his media availabilities in particular, right? Like, if his heart rate quickens at all, like, to a normal person's resting heart rate during a media availability, I'd be shocked. And all of a sudden, he had this moment where he, in frustration, kind of ran both his hands through his hair and just said, you know, like, this is on us. Like, that, I take it personally. And it wasn't, you know, back of his throat. Like, he meant it. He meant what he was saying in terms of, you know, how angry he was at the club's performance and how that's caused the organization to be reflected. And, you know, I just thought it was a portrait of a player doing his best on a struggling team. And like so many other people associated with that logo right now, completely out of answers.
Last one. That's a great answer, by the way. Last one for you. What do you expect when Benning speaks later on today?
I mean, again, it feels like a pony show at this point, right? It feels like someone has to be trotted out to take responsibility and, in part, to be a target that sort of frees up the pressure in this organization or in this marketplace being directed toward ownership, right? That's what it feels like to me. There's nothing he can say, Jeff.
Here's what I want to get to, because I think, and you brought this up on Twitter not too long ago, like the performative anger after you lose a game. Like, it's, I've always hated it. I think it's ridiculous, but the guys seem to think that you have to do that type of performance. Doesn't today kind of seem like it's going to be another performance, but of a different kind? I don't think it's going to be performative anger that we see out of Jim Benning, but there is going to be a performance. Would you agree with that?
I would, and one that serves to obscure, like, we know who Jim Benning is as a general manager at this point. This is eighth season. Like, we know who he is as a general manager. We know basically what he thinks about building teams. You know, we understand how he handles pressure in these situations. You know, we've heard it all. Like, Jim Benning's filled volumes with media quotes and press availabilities over the course of nearly a decade in charge in Vancouver, right? Mm-hmm. The fundamental question that I think fans in Vancouver don't understand anymore is, how has this level of performance been tolerated by this organization for so long? How and why, right? That is what fans in this market do not understand. That is what the media in this market do not understand. That's what observers around the league, right? Agents who tell me that it's a bizarre organization, right? Other teams who call, and the Canucks are in one of those situations where you get calls from, like, random contacts, scouts, executives from around the league, and they're just like, oh boy, what's happening, right? Like, what is going on there? And you know, fundamentally, like, at its base level, I don't know. And neither does anyone else who covers this team. Neither does anyone who supports or pays to buy tickets to see this team play. Like, why has this been tolerated for so long? Jim Benning will meet the media today, but he's not the guy who can answer that question. And so, to me, it sort of feels like a bauble that's being presented to the fan base, as opposed to something substantive that will help us get to clarity and understanding what's next for this franchise.
We will wait to see. It'll be interesting nonetheless. Drancer, you're the best. Thanks so much for stopping by, as always.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Enjoy the show and enjoy the press conference. Should be newsworthy one way or another.
And as a stubborn bald man, nothing I love better than swapping Winston Churchill quotes. So we'll do it again sometime.
it's a pretension hour. Two amateur historians, Drancer and Merrick. Very good.
Be well. Only
someone whose nickname was Merrick Late would pull a Winston Churchill World War I quote out of things, though, Drancer. I'm sure you can appreciate that.
Not even one of the better known quotes.
You know, I'm trying to go obscure, real hipster style with you there, Drancer. Russian Revolution. Jeez, there he is, Thomas Drance from the Canucks Hour and the Athletic. Coming up, David Amber, top of the hour. We'll talk about the Maple Leafs. They'll face off against the New York Rangers a little bit later on this evening. It is, by the way, an 11-game NHL calendar this evening. No Nashville and Ottawa. Ottawa's games have been postponed, three of them. The Nashville game tonight is one of them. A couple of games of particular note. The game of the night, you know, much like a couple of nights ago when the game of the night was a late one for everyone in the East, and that was Washington and Anaheim. Tonight, the tops in the Metro face off against the tops in the Pacific. The game of the night tonight, Carolina Hurricanes facing off against the Anaheim Ducks. That one should be a good one as well. The Jets and the Oilers Tuesday was a 6-1 beatdown of the Oilers by the Winnipeg Jets. Mikko Koskinen, not his best night. Leakin' pucks again. Duncan Keith, not his best game as an Edmonton Oiler. Calgary and Buffalo. How about Johnny Gaudreau the other night against the Philadelphia Flyers in a 2-1 overtime loss? Looking like some of the best play we've seen out of Johnny Gaudreau so far this season, despite the fact that they lost. Looked like Denny Savard out of the 80s. Flames, by the way, have lost four of their last five. Tampa and Philly, it's Vasilevsky versus Hart. Hart with the .935 save percentage. Vasilevsky with the .924. Ryan Ellis, by the way, Alain Vigneault is saying today he will be out 4 to 6 more weeks. That is a lower body injury. there. When we come back, David Amber on the Maple Leafs. They face off against the Rangers a little bit later on this evening. Merrick Show continues with DA on the Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Keep it here. Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2 of the Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. A couple of quick follow-up notes, teeing up some of the games around the NHL this evening. Stuart Skinner gets a start tonight for the Oilers as they face off against the Winnipeg Jets. Big one there. Also, Dallas and Minnesota. The Dallas Stars look for the third win in a row. They're on the road at the XL Energy Center. Anton Khudobin starts for Dallas. But the big story, the return of Ryan Suter. As he returns to the scene of the buyout, heard all around the NHL universe. Maple Leafs face off against the New York Rangers, 7 o'clock Eastern this evening. Two teams that are on a four-game winning streak right now. David Amber from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada joins me now. DA, how are you doing today, pal?
I'm doing well, and thanks for having me on the show. It's been a while since we've seen each other. Guess what? Since Saturday, I'm having a bit of withdrawal, so thanks for having me on, Jeff. I like this show. I'm enjoying it.
Beats working for 11, pal. Trust me. Get to talk about hockey every day for 2 hours. So it's a great gig. Hey, watch hockey games and then talk about them. Okay, where do I sign? Every 2 weeks a paycheck shows up and someone yells stop thief. Before we get into the Maple Leafs and the Rangers, one of 11 games on the board this evening, do you have a thought on the Vancouver Canucks right now? Talked to Elliot about it to kick off the show. Thomas Drantz a couple of seconds ago. Listen, Vancouver is a huge hockey market, really passionate fans. We know that fan base can be a lot of fun to interact with sometimes on social media. We've all had that experience, but right now it is a hot market. It is an angry market. I don't think it's an apathetic market yet, which is always the sign of demise. It's an angry market, and it's a volcano that's raging. How do you see Vancouver right now?
Well, I think like everyone else, I'm a bit surprised, if not shocked, at how poorly they've played this year. I picked them like an idiot to win the Pacific Division. I really thought I liked the moves. I still like the moves they made in the offseason. You know, it's funny. There's so much discontent from the fan base, understandably. But there was a lot of celebration from the same fan base during the offseason. I mean, the guys that had, you know, faced the ire of the fans in Vancouver, the Louis Eriksons and you know, to some, you know, Antoine Roussel, et cetera, were moved out. Jake Virtanen. So they made a number of moves, and seemingly the lineup's better, and the results haven't shown that. You can't survive. I'm not simplifying it, but you can't survive when your PK is giving up, you know, essentially two goals a game. I mean, you can't, right? In the last 10 games, they've given up 19 goals shorthanded. You can't win games like that. And when your power play's anemic, it just augments the problem. And again, I'm not ignoring everything else. I think the identity is an issue. You know, what kind of team is it? You know, are they a checking team? Are they a scoring team? Are they a defensive team? They're not really anything right now. And I think that's a big part of the problem. Like, who are the Vancouver Canucks? I like the individual parts. I like the players. The sum of the parts hasn't equated to success as well as you would have thought. And as far as the mood in Vancouver, yeah, of course people are upset. It's been, you know, kind of a long time coming, and a lot of optimism met with disappointment over the last 6-7 years, aside from the small stretch in the bubble, which, you know, by large accounts, a lot of people sort of said, you know, it was an anomaly. You know, they took on a Minnesota team, then they took on a St. Louis team, and everything was up. You know, everything was so strange. There was no fans. They're in this bubble. And they sort of said, well, you know, what do we make of that? And since then, it's just been sort of an unmitigated disaster. And the one thing, and Elliot pointed this out, you look at some of the players, the looks on their faces, the desperation. And, you know, we talked about this with Jamal Mayers and Anthony Stewart on Tuesday, Jeff. You know, they're waiting for something to happen. And to me, there's a little bit of a, you know, they're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it doesn't mean necessarily the coach has to be fired or the GM has to be removed. But I think the players are sort of wondering what's going to happen. And Anthony Stewart made a good comment when I brought that up. He said, well, you know, they moved out 10 players from last year's team. You know, the moves have happened, and now it's incumbent on the players to step up and do their part. So I think that's where we're at right now. I don't think the season is completely over, but I definitely think they have such a huge road in front of them, and I'd love to see them, you know, start to turn things around tomorrow versus the Jets.
So are you a, Elliot and I were talking about this kickoff the show, are you a U.S. Thanksgiving, that's the cut line for in or out of the playoffs, or do you have it earlier like Elliot?
Well, you know what, Jeff? I mean, listen, if you look at the numbers, you'd say, yeah, the U.S. Thanksgiving is that demarcation between playoff teams and non-playoff teams. It's worth factoring in that the league started, what, 10 days later than they usually do, so that might not be completely signify the end. You know, and then you get those anomalies. You get the St. Louis Blues, who are dead last on January 14th or whatever it was, and then win the Stanley Cup. I wouldn't say Vancouver's dead, and the only reason I would say that is in that division, I just don't know what to make of Anaheim, Los Angeles, San Jose. I mean, are you believers in these three California teams and the great starts all three of them have, you know, got off to? You know, is Anaheim a team that's going to be fighting for first in the division and sitting atop the division as they are now come April, come May? I'm not sure about that. You know, Los Angeles and San Jose, same thing. I'd be more surprised if we have two California teams in the playoffs and if we have no California teams in the playoffs. So maybe I'm still underselling those teams. And with that in mind, the opening might be there for Vancouver to really heat up and find a way to at least be in the playoff discussion. But, you know, again, maybe I'm buying fool's gold because, you know, Vancouver can't look any, I mean, Vancouver's not looked anything like a playoff team so far. So maybe I'm the crazy one and you know, a team, they've shown us who they are and this is the team they are. I'd like to think that's not the case, but as of yet, they've been just it's been tough.
You know, the interesting comments about Anaheim as well. Like, I was skeptical about Anaheim going into this season. Like, Bob Murray, who's now the ex-general manager there, I mean, didn't do anything to help this team on the ice. Now, he did bring in Jeff Ward, which was crucial because he runs a power play, and that's an outstanding power play. I guess a top 10 power play in the NHL, and that's gone a long way. To help the Anaheim Ducks. I kind of look at Anaheim and I say, like, I wonder, you know, how much, you know, last year and COVID really affected a veteran like Ryan Getzlaf. Someone told that to me not too long ago, said, you know, don't be surprised at Getzlaf's performance this year. COVID really took a toll on Ryan Getzlaf. You know, we tend to focus, DA, on the younger players. And we talked about Carter Hart and how, you know, he really felt it and had a tough time as a young player because he doesn't have a family to go home to. He just goes home to his, you know, goes to his home and he lives between his ears. And that's tough on a young person. And someone said, you know, Ryan Getzlaf was, you know, really, really hurt by the season last year and the, you know, the COVID hockey season. Listen, is Troy Terry going to keep shooting at 30%? No. You know, he's going to come back down to earth. I think that's true. But, you know, Trevor Zegras is playing good. I think Isaac Lundestrom, I think there's a player who, you know, he's sort of like a mini Swedish Bergeron that we've been waiting to sort of begin to bust out. I like their blue line. And the one reason why I think I'm more sold on Anaheim than a lot of people, DA, is John Gibson. And you've seen it before, DA, when you have the goalie and you can ride the goalie, that erases a lot of your mistakes, and you can cheat a lot when you have the goalie. And right now, listen, save percentage of .925. I mean, and he's looked fantastic for Anaheim. So do I think they'll keep, you know, the winning streak going for the remainder of the season? No, and it might come crashing down tonight against a really tough Carolina team. But I don't know. Like, here we are, you know, 15, 16, 17 games into a season. I might be buying on Anaheim here. Maybe there's enough cheese in the trap that I've actually put my hand in to try to snatch it, DA, because I'm kind of believing in Anaheim.
Well, listen, Dallas Eakins, Jeff Ward, Newell Brown, they deserve, you know, the whole coaching staff deserves a ton of credit because the maturation of these young players has been incredible to see. Coming off his World Junior MVP, I had Trevor Zegras as the Calder winner last year. Same. Clearly that didn't happen. Yeah, so there you go. We were a year late. Zegras is looking like that guy. He can be dominant at times. We saw him the last game was sensational, a three-point game, a couple of beautiful goals. Troy Terry, I don't know what to make of this, right? He's on a 15-game point streak at this point, and he's among league leaders in points. And you mentioned Getzlaf, And it's funny, I put out a tweet a few days ago sort of saying, here's my forward group for Team Canada. And, you know, here are the locks. Here are the guys I think are on the bubble. And I didn't mention Getzlaff. And I wrote at the bottom, am I missing anyone? And, you know, a few Sorellis were thrown in there and a few other guys were thrown in there. RNH wasn't on my list. And I then started getting a lot of Ryan Getzlaff. And it's true. I mean, he's probably in that discussion. He's been that good this year. He's such a great facilitator. He's such a great leader. He's using, you know, all of his strengths, his body, and to his advantage, as he's always done. And, you know, he certainly has played for Team Canada before. So, you know, it's been sort of this resurrection, sort of a fountain of youth found by some of their veterans in Henrik and Getzlaff. And Shattenkirk's had a great year. And then combined with these young guys, and as you mentioned, probably the biggest factor for the team is you have John Gibson, who's arguably, you know, a top five goalie in the National Hockey League. So far, so good. I'm just wondering, is this sustainable? That's all. I mean, Troy Terry, is he going to have 100 points at the end of the season? Is Getzlaff going to suddenly have an 85, 90-point season? Like, you're asking for everything to fall into place, and maybe I should start to believe, and obviously that's going to be a storyline that continues. If they continue to play like this, This is going to be, they're going to pick up some momentum for sure.
So Zegras was my guy that I picked. Everyone was giving it to Caulfield at the beginning of the season. Zegras was my guy for the Calder this season, and he's having a little bit of a slow start, but he's turned around. Here's my question to you, because I know that you and Elliot aren't shy about putting down the odd wager. I heard Boomer Gordon talking about this the other day on NHL Network, and he brings up a really interesting bet here. If I said for the Calder Trophy, if I said Lucas Raymond of the Detroit Red Wings versus the Field, what would you take?
Well, that's tough. I'm going to take the Field, and I'll be honest with you. That's a legitimate question, though, because Raymond's been that good, and he clearly has the skill set. I mean, he was taken fourth overall for a reason, right? The reason I'm going to take the Field, the first and foremost, simply is because Mo Sider, his teammate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Kelly Rudy has been singing his praises, and I started to watch him with a much more close eye, and he really just controls the pace when he's out there. He's so smart. He's so smooth. It's been a big part of a catalyst to why Detroit's offense has been so dynamic this year. If anything, you know, right now he might be right there with Raymond. As a defenseman, he's certainly not going to have the points that Raymond has, but he's right behind, and he does so many things that he might be the guy I look to and say, he might be the front runner right now as far as the Calder goes. So I would take the Field, but that's not, you know, unheard of. Also, you know, Mercer, what he's doing has been pretty exciting as well in New Jersey. It's someone to keep an eye on. And I know Sam Cosentino has been so super hot for Mercer and what he brings to the table. He's been just electric, especially with Jack Hughes out. He sort of filled that void for the Devils so far. It's interesting, but right now, I'd say right now you're right, Jeff. I mean, I think Raymond is the front runner, but I would say, I really like Sider and to keep an eye on him.
And you know what? We haven't seen someone hit in Detroit like this since Nicholas Cronwall. And aren't you starting to get that like soap and warm water feeling about Sider? Like, this is like a new version of Nicholas Cronwall here in the game. Okay. Maple Leafs facing off against the Rangers tonight. Two teams that have both won four games in a row. And, you know, one of the questions around the Maple Leafs right now, as Jack Campbell continues, he's coming off a shutout against Nashville. Jack Campbell really demonstrated that he is a legit number one netminder in the NHL. The question, when you talk about Jack Campbell, inevitably and quickly, I might add, turns to what's his next contract going to look like?
Oh no!
Do you want to wade into these waters? These, who do you is he the Cal Peterson deal? I don't know where the decimal point is going to end up here for Jack Campbell, but game in and game out, DA. Maybe if you don't want to weigh in on the next contract, but just the performance right now, .943 save percentage. He's on the expiring contract. He is going to get a significant bump up from 1.6. And he's the classic case of the late bloomer. Didn't see it in Dallas. Didn't see it in L.A. You know, they make the deal, and you wonder if in the back of Dubas' mind is, we're going to give this guy a shot. Somewhere down the road, even if Freddie's here or Freddie's not, to be a number one. So far, he's jumped over that hurdle.
Yeah, and it's funny, that is the conversation. It's funny, all the conversation was about Morgan Riley, and then once that got resolved, okay, let's refocus now to Jack Campbell. The Maple Leaf fan base just can't, they can't embrace, you know, they've won 9 of 10, and it's never like a fun moment. It's always like, what's the next, you know, problem that we have to address? And this is going to be a problem. Listen, the biggest problem, I think, with Jack Campbell's next contract is that Peter Mrazek is making $3.8 million for the next 3 years. And, you know, if I'm Jack Campbell's representative, I'm saying, well, clearly Jack Campbell's the number one guy here. Mrazek can't stay healthy. He's a decent goalie when he's healthy, but he can't stay healthy. We've seen that in his track record. So, you know, how much does Jack Campbell get? And you mentioned Cal Peterson. That was a pretty lucrative deal for a guy without a huge resume. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what number.
Just for our listeners, though, that's a 3-year, $15 million deal. So it's cap hit of $5 million. So I should have said that out of the gate. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, right now, he's one of the best goalies in the league. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. You know, can he do this over the course of a whole season? You know, have a .943 save percentage? Probably not. But I think what it's done is it's allowed the team to play freely. And we all know the Leafs need to play freely with the group of players they have to do their best. They have to have the ability to have someone back there to disguise some of their mistakes. And there are still a lot of defensive breakdowns here and there with the Maple Leafs, a lot of odd man rushes and great opportunities. And Jack Campbell has really put a Band-Aid on that situation thus far. I think that's interesting. The real question I have, Jeff, and you know, is, if you're Kyle Dubas, does it behoove you to, like, should you be trying to get this deal done ASAP, or should you wait this out? Wait this out for Mrazek to get healthy, for Campbell to have a longer sort of resume built up about sustainability. Can this guy start 55 games, right? He's never done that before, right? I mean, he's been a lifelong, the most starts he's ever had is 25 in a season. So take that for what it is. Like, he's not Connor Hellebuck, who you can run out there 65 times a season for 4 straight seasons. So, you know, that's something to factor in if you're Kyle Dubas and the Leafs management as well.
The question that I have there, this is just my personal preference. I'm curious where you sit on this one. I'm of the belief that you never let play, if you want to keep them, don't let them get close to free agency. Like, don't put them in a position where they say, you know what, we've come this far. Let's see what's in the other yard. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, right now, free agency might not even be a thing in Jack Campbell's mind. But as the months go on, you get closer and closer, and you talk to your agent, and you know, you get to a point, I would imagine, David, where you would say, you know what, I've come this far without a deal. I've come this close to free agency. Why don't we just see what's out there?
Like, you run that risk.
A guy, I don't let it. Like, Lou Lamoriello used to always be, if you have time, take it. I'm not so sure that I subscribe to that in every single situation, especially not one as sensitive as a goalie issue.
Well, look at some of the last teams that have tried that tact. All we have to say is St. Louis, Alex Pietrangelo. Well, let's wait. We give Justin Falk the money. We'll wait. We'll see how things are going to go. Well, you know what? You lose Alex Pietrangelo, right? And you didn't have to lose him. By all accounts, if you listen to what Alex Pietrangelo said, is he was more than excited to return to a team he had just won a Stanley Cup with, but he didn't feel the love. And I think that is true. The one thing I'll say that differs is Jack Campbell, at least on the surface, he seems like he loves it here. He loves it in Toronto. He loves his teammates. He loves this opportunity. He loves the fact that Toronto went, you know, and got him and sort of, I wouldn't say resurrected his career, but certainly put him into a situation that seemingly he wasn't necessarily going to have in Los Angeles behind Jonathan Quick. So I do think, I'm not saying loyalty is there to a fault, but I do think, all things being equal, Jack Campbell would like to stay a Toronto Maple Leaf. He's very tight with so many of the players, but I'm not sure. I'm really, I'm not sure what the best tack to take is here, but I do think you run the risk. I think you bring up a really good point, Jeff, that if they don't show him some love, that someone else will, and that could come back to bite them.
The other thing that complicates things too, if you're Kyle Dubas, is like Jack Campbell is 29 years old, so he knows this is his shot, right, DA, to set him and his family up. This is, he's finally gotten there. It's taken him longer than a lot of people would have expected when he was drafted in the first round by the Dallas Stars, but he's there now, and this is his chance to ring the bell. Like, I just wonder how much that like, you can. Like, I understand they love the teammates, love the city. They're chanting "Soup." This is wonderful. I'm getting shutouts. The defense is good. And we have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. But family, money, set up for the future. This is his shot at it. You know what I mean?
You know what? You know what it likens to, and it's not exactly the same, but Robin Leonard. That's who I would. That's who I would liken it to. Robin Leonard. We all know he's had those the struggles, you know, through early parts of his career. Showed some flashes of brilliance, and for a number of reasons, didn't emerge as that star goalie. And then he did, and he got his payday in Vegas, and they had to clear the dance floor and move Marc-Andre Fleury and give him that opportunity. I kind of liken these situations. Jack Campbell had a whole series of struggles. A lot of it. He even said he just put too much pressure on himself, whether it was in Dallas or some of the other stops he made. And finally, now he feels comfortable and confident and very much in a good place. And just like Leonard, what did Leonard go? 525 or something along those lines, or 530? I don't even remember, but it was a good payday. Yep. And I imagine that's what Jack Campbell's hoping to land as well. And they're the same age, right? Like Leonard and Campbell are both 29, 30 years old. And This is their opportunity, as you said. So he's certainly hoping to hit the jackpot, and at least on this short term, results we've seen, he's earned it. Let's face facts. He's earning a decent contract at this point.
Absolutely. Leafs will face off against the Rangers. Very quietly, I might add, as quiet as you can be in a market like New York. I think a lot of hockey fans, listeners to this program, might be shocked at what I'm about to say. Leon Draisaitl has 17 goals. He's number one in goals in the NHL. Number two is Chris Kreider. Now, he's tied with Alex Ovechkin and Kyle Connor, but Chris Kreider has 12 goals. Number two in the NHL. Is this the quietest 12 goals in the NHL right now? This is like New York, and it's Kreider, and it's a controversial player, and he's number two, and not a peep out there about Chris Kreider.
Yeah, it's funny. And I'm trying to put my finger on it, because it has been kind of a quiet. When you talk about the Rangers, everyone talks about Adam Fox. Everyone talks about Shesterkin. I know you guys have been banging the drum for him to win the Vezina or be that guy. Even Zibanejad and Panarin maybe get a little bit more buzz. Maybe the expectations have been so high on this guy that finally he seems to be fulfilling them, right? Like, Kreider to me was that guy you always watched. He'd finish the year with 20 to 25 goals, and he'd have a few games where he was such a big difference maker. But you go, a guy who can skate like that, and a guy who, when he is a physical and is as big as him, when he is a physical presence, can really take over a game. Why doesn't he do it more often? And maybe the expectations have been so high for Kreider that people he slips under the radar a little bit. Is that as fair statement to make? He's never been a 30 goal scorer, and this looks like the year he's going to break out and potentially be that 30 or 40 goal scorer and be that difference maker.
He's you look at that left side of the Rangers, like that left side is really good, because we haven't even mentioned Artemi Panarin, and he's one of the best left wingers in the game. Kreider, for whatever reason, can't get a headline, but there he is with 12 goals on a really good line with Mika Zibanejad and Barkley Goodrow, who just caught a punch in the face from Brendan Gallagher the other night. But this Ranger team to me is a fascinating one. I was talking to Kevin Woodley from In Goal about this the other day. You mentioned Igor Shesterkin. This is a team that's quite content to just say, we don't have to play great defensively because we have the goaltender, so we're going to cheat. We're going to give up a ton of chances, but that's okay because Shesterkin's going to be in the Vezina Trophy conversation. Like, this team gives up chances by the bushel. Like, it is, and they rely a ton on Igor Shesterkin. So far, he's been great. So far, he's, very much kept them in games that they probably shouldn't have been in. But this is an explosive team. This is a tougher team. This is a harder team to play against, even with Sammy Blaze not in the lineup anymore due to injury. So more responsibility to the Julian Gauthiers of the Rangers. But when I say New York Rangers right now to you, David, what comes to your mind? Like, what's the first thing you see in your mind when you say Rangers right now?
Oh, my goodness. That's a great question, because they are one of those teams. I liken them to Philadelphia. I'm not sure, you know, are they going to make it to the Stanley Cup final, or are they going to miss the playoffs? And I know that sounds crazy because New York's gotten off to a good start, but I didn't know. That whole Metropolitan Division, quite honestly, I find just completely perplexing, right? I just didn't know what to make. Aside from Carolina, I felt pretty good about going into the season. I really didn't know what to make. And the Islanders, sorry. I just didn't know what to make of that next group of Washington, Philly, Pittsburgh, and the Rangers. I just wasn't sure how to lump them in and throw Devils in there too. I don't know what the first thing that comes to mind is. I mean, what's the identity of the Rangers? Is it goaltending and then, you know, Panarin?
It's goaltending. To me, I think you nailed it right off the hop. It's goaltending. Yeah. It's just Shesterkin, because they are relying so much on this guy. Like, you'll see tonight, like the Maple Leafs will get a bajillion chances. Like, that's just what they do. They leak chances.
And they've turned the whole team over. Kreider's the longest-serving Ranger, right? He's the only one left from that 2014 final team. Like, think about that. They've completely turned the franchise over in 7 years, except for one player. So, you know, what is the identity? I think in a way that holds well for them, though, is it's going to be Shesterkin, who they're obviously incredibly comfortable with. And then you've got the stud defenseman in Fox. And, you know, you've got a good – I like the rest of their blue line, and I know it's not perfect, but, I think there's a lot of room for growth there when you look at the Keandre Millers of the world. And then you look at their forward group. It's an interesting team, and maybe I've underestimated them because I just didn't know what to expect. But if Kreider can be this guy who's going to be the sort of, you know, take some pressure off Panarin and Zibanejad, they really are going to be a formidable team in a tough outcome playoff time. But I don't even know if I've answered your question. I'm not sure. When I think New York Rangers, I don't suddenly think of one thing. I don't know exactly what the identity is. Certainly goaltending is maybe what it's emerging as, but right now it's still a little up in the air to me.
Let me ask one thing to conclude here, because I'm curious, you know, what goes through someone's mind, and then at what point they realize, oh man, I've made a horrible mistake. I mentioned Gallagher and Gaudreau from the other night, that Montreal New York Rangers game. What do you think is going through Michael Pezzetta's mind the minute that he realizes, wait a minute, I've got to fight Ryan Reeves?
Oh my God, it's so funny. So Anthony Stewart and I were working those games on Tuesday night, and I said, Stewie, someone's fighting the Reeves, and I couldn't see him. I see the hair, and I'm like, it's Pezzetta. You know, we don't have the sound on. We have like 7 screens going at the same time, and he's like, oh, man. He goes, how many games has that guy played? And I'm like looking it up. I'm like, I think this is like his 5th game. And he said, wow. And you know what? Kudos to him. He survived, and I think that's all he could have hoped to do in that fight. But my God, like, and he basically, you know, Reeves hit him. And then Reeves gave him a little slash and then hit him into the boards with a pretty thunderous hit. And Pezzetta right away tracked down Reeves, who was more than willing to go. I don't know. I wonder what's going through your head, because, boy, when Reeves got that right hand loose, it was not – it could have been a lot worse.
It's not good. I mean, I'll tell you what. I'm with you. Like, I'll give it up to Pezzetta. That you go into that one knowing that that's not a fight you're going to win. Like, I remember he fought Curtis Gabriel in preseason as well. Like, that guy, whatever, like, he's the epitome of the guy that he's a gamer. He'll do whatever to get attention, get noticed, all of it. Whew, man, there's one thing to lead with your heart, and another to lead with your head. And clearly Pezzetta was leading with his heart, but it was his head that felt it at the end of that fight with Ryan Reeves.
Yeah.
DA, great stuff as always, pal. You be well. The reigning champion, by the way, of the in-season Stanley Cup, our podcast championship. Although Elliot and I are going head to head tonight, by the way. Hey,
yeah, it's slipping away. I thought I had mathematically eliminated a few. You were the last guy on the board, and here you come. You're marching up the ranks here. Yeah, I haven't tasted victory in a little while here, so I'm getting a little antsy. So I'm hopeful for maybe a. What do I need? I need a Winnipeg win tonight, and then I've got Vancouver as my team, so we could have Winnipeg-Vancouver tomorrow if Winnipeg wins tonight. We'll see.
Nah, I need Stuart Skinner to lead the Oilers to a big win against the Jets and then go on a huge run here with McDavid and the Oilers. That's what I need to get back into the rarefied David Amber air in this in-season Stanley Cup. You're the best, DA. Thanks so much for this, pal. You be good.
Thanks for having me on. We'll see you Saturday.
There he is, David Amber from Hockey Night in Canada and the NHL on Sportsnet. Stepping away, When we come back, I have a little tour around the NHL, some of the news and some of the issues. Don't forget, in half an hour, you're listening in Vancouver, Jim Benning will be speaking, will be part of the media festivities today in a move that a lot of people have pointed out. You know, Elliot mentioned this off the top of the show, is probably to be there to, for lack of a better term, to take bullets right now, because it's all the players that are facing the media, facing the questions, facing the microphones, Travis Green, the coaching staff, facing the microphones, facing the cameras, facing all of it. And this is Jim Benning, the general manager, saying, all right, I have to come out here now. And I've got to be part of this. And he will. And regardless of what is asked or how he answers, all of this will be newsworthy as the Vancouver Canucks continue to spiral. A better effort last night against the Colorado Avalanche, better than a week ago when they lost 7-1, but still the result very much the same, 4-2. The penalty kill still very much an issue. Discipline, an issue last night for the Vancouver Canucks. Listen, everybody is frustrated there. The players, the coaches, the managers, the owner, and certainly the fans who are expressing it loudly, either in the rink or on social media. So Benning speaks in half an hour. Curious to see what happens there. More of the Merrick Show here in a couple of moments. A tour around the NHL when we return across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday. Thanks so much for joining me today, as always. Or if you're listening to the podcast, thank you so much for the download. It is much appreciated. Matt Marchese, our producer. Hey, Matty, you know what happened to me today?
No, I don't. We actually haven't talked a lot this morning, so.
No, I know. It's been real nice, man. Nice and quiet around here. Oh, it's been good. No, Christmas came a little bit early, and I don't know. If you're like me, you normally have like 3 or 4 books on the go at any given time, and I'm the same way, and I now have to add 3, and I wouldn't mind getting all 3 of these authors on the show at some point. So a package showed up from ECW Press with 3 brand new hockey books. One of them from Tim Falconer, called The Klondikers, Dawson City Stanley Cup Challenge and How a Nation Fell in Love with Hockey. Nice little historical book.
I like that.
Another one. I know that's a geek read for me. Trust me. Inexact Science, the 6 most compelling draft years in NHL history. This is with Bruce and Evan Dobigan. Bruce, by the way, has written, you know, whenever you get asked, you know, which are your favorite hockey books? You know, which are the ones you would recommend to everybody? You know, I always say, you know, Gump Worsley's They Call Me Gump, which is an entertaining read. Kevin Shea's story about Bill Barilko, the biography of the late Maple Leafs defenseman, is another one. And then Dobigan's Money Players, I think, is a must read for everybody. But this one, see, I'm in love with, and I think a lot of people are, the alternative universe stories of the NHL. Like, what would have happened if this player didn't go number one, or this team selected that player instead? How it sends a, you know, a different team into a different trajectory. And so this one, the 6 most compelling draft years in NHL history, 71, 79, 84, 89, 91, and 2005, how the courses of history were changed. And then, and this one's near and dear to my heart because I live in Stouffville. This guy lives in Stouffville as well. He is a hockey legend. All you Peter Puck fans out there, pay attention, because Brian McFarlane has a new book out, a memoir called A Hell of a Life in Hockey. Brian McFarlane. This will be, I'll start this one and the Dobigan books probably tonight and get through these as quickly as I can, because I'd love to have both of them on the show. Man, I'll tell you, I have such a soft spot in my heart for Brian McFarlane. You're probably, you're too young to remember Brian McFarlane on Hockey Night. Maddie,
I am, but a little bit, but I'm significantly younger than you, so I mean that's understandable. but I've watched a bunch of things with Brian McFarlane in them, and I know my dad talked about him at length as well, because my dad he's older than you, Jeff, so you're okay there. But yeah, he's a legend, absolute legend.
broadcast legend. His father, Leslie McFarland, you might know better by one of his assumed names, and that is Franklin Dixon. That was the name that he used to write the Hardy Boys mystery series. Now, So that's Brian's father. And the story is actually not great at all. So I remember at one of the rubber chicken dinners having a conversation with Brian about, you know, his father and Hardy Boys and all that. And he said, yeah, you know, my dad, unfortunately, our family was pretty poor and, you know, struggling to make ends meet. And my dad was a writer, of course, and he came up with this Hardy Boys, this mystery series. And he said he signed like the worst publishing contract ever. It was a flat fee, $100 per book, was it. So he had to crank out as many of these as possible, which is why you have so many. I mean, I grew up reading these things. I'm not sure if you did as well.
Yeah, me too.
I grew up reading the Hardy Boys, and that's Brian's father, the late Leslie McFarland, Franklin Dixon. And it was a bad day. It had so many books because if Leslie wanted to get paid, he had to crank out another Hardy Boys book, and he would get the princely sum of $100. Oh, horrible story, eh?
See, you tune into this show, and not only do you get hockey, but you get history lessons too. Things that you would even think about would come up on this show, and I learned something today.
I can bore you in a lot of different ways. You hear me and DA talking about Reeves and Pezzetta. What'd you think of that?
So, I remember seeing this clip, and because you guys were talking about it, we've got to play it because Ryan Reeves is one of the most entertaining players on and off the ice. But his comments post game after the fight were incredible. Lance, you can run it.
Let's do it.
Was he chirping for a while, or he just said, "Let's go"?
I don't know if I ran him or I ran somebody else. I couldn't really tell who I hit, but he just kind of came up behind and was yelling at me. And I don't know if you see the replay. There was a lot of confusion on my face. I didn't know if he was serious or not. But
so you didn't know him at all.
No, yeah.
So you don't know if he can fight or not.
No, I mean I assume. Right. Well, I assumed he could fight.
What a great comment. He could fight. If he's gonna do it, I assumed he could fight. You know, there are very few, by the way, that are in that league. And someone who doesn't get talked about really a whole bunch, because we focus a lot on Tom Wilson, obviously. Although I don't think the Washington Capitals have a fighting major this year, do they? I think Arizona's got like 10. I don't think the Capitals have a single one.
I can check, but I don't think so.
Anyway, we talk about Tom Wilson a lot. We talk about Ryan Reeves a lot. We talk about how the Metropolitan Division has some old school with it and is really knuckled up. You know the one guy that would be coveted by a number of teams out there, and he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. And he plays semi-regularly. He's 30 years old, and he's legit tough. You know who I'm thinking of?
I believe he plays in Anaheim.
Nicholas Deslauriers.
Mm-hmm. And for people that don't watch enough Ducks hockey, he's tough, like legit tough. There's a difference between a guy who fights every so often and he's tough, and then there's a difference between legit tough. He's legit tough, like scary tough.
Yeah, he really is too. What else you got on your mind? What else is going on in your world?
Okay, I know that so there's one thing that I do want to get to, but quickly, I do want to get to this because you're a gear geek guy. LA Kings debuted their silver helmets last night. Like or don't like?
Yeah, I do. I like them. I do. I like those. I like the gold helmets of the Vegas Golden Knights as well. I hope that when these two teams, the next time they face off against each other, they'll wear their gold and silver helmets. Yeah, I dug them. What about you? Do you like them?
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. I mean, it's different. The NHL is, you know, in a lot of cases, is very monotonous with a lot of things they do. This is something different. I'm good with it. I mean, don't do it all the time, but I'm okay with it. But there is one thing that I'm not okay with, and we didn't.
Okay.
I don't think we've brought this up on this show or in any other show. The Colorado Avalanche with the blue pants and the blue numbers with the white jerseys, not a fan.
I like them. Why not?
No, I'm not a fan. The color scheme doesn't work for me. Like, I'm not the most trendy person in the world, but I mean, it just doesn't. The color scheme doesn't work for me.
I don't know. I think it looks great. The one thing that I keep coming back to is to take it to a totally different area. By the way, I, again, on record, I love that color combo. I love that. of the Avs. The one thing that I want to see more of in the NHL, you and I have talked about this before, is green. More green, please.
Yes.
You know, when the Wild do their throwbacks and they go Minnesota North Stars colors.
Oh,
Minnesota
I love
North
it.
Stars stuff. Looks great, right?
Yeah, that was my high school colors were green and gold. So I mean, they were. Yeah, I love that color scheme. Those third jerseys were among the best that I've seen. Those Wild
right,
ones.
Really, really good. But no, I'm good with for Colorado. Sure. I'm good with. I love Minnesota's. I think we all are. And I dig the new Kings helmets or the shiny silver helmets. I dig it. You know the great story about the Kings is when they their original logo, even though they were called the Kings, the original owner, you know, wanted to have like a crown for the logo.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about that specific crown that they chose?
I believe that it's the same one that Real Madrid used.
It's a Queen's crown.
Oh, I didn't know it's that, but I thought Real Kings, Madrid used a similar one.
But I don't think anyone had the heart to tell the owner. At that point, it's like, yes, sir. That's the crown you want for the Kings? You got it, sir.
He went with purple and gold jerseys. I mean, at that point, I don't think you can tell him anything.
I think purple and gold look great, though. I know I was in the minority on this one. I didn't like when they made the change. I wanted to keep the purple and gold. I loved it because it just looked different. You know, that was a trend where everybody had to go to the black because it looked cool and it looked rough. Everyone had to look like, you know, hockey. It had to look like the Raiders, right?
Yes, exactly.
Got to go to black, got to be cool. It's like, no, because you know what that's like? You know what that's like, Maddie? I'll tell you exactly what that's like. That's like when you're going out at night and you want to have like instant cool, you put on a Ramones t-shirt. Is there anything phonier than someone trying to pick up secondhand cool by putting on the Ramones t-shirt to try to glom onto the cool that were the Ramones?
But don't you have to ask
for yourself?
Don't you have to ask that person if they can name five Ramones songs?
Oh yeah, of course.
Because they can. That's almost a guarantee.
The one is the best. That's the best Ramones tune. But anyway, but no, that's kind of how I looked at that whole era. And the Kings got sucked up into it. And I get it. And it looked great on Gretzky. A new, you know, new version of the Kings. Turn the page. Here come the Kings going to the Stanley Cup. And all. Sure, I get it. I just like the purple and gold. Just different colors, please. Don't be shy about using, you know, the entire rainbow here, folks.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of what others perceive to be bad jerseys. I love the Islanders fisherman jersey. I love it.
Okay, hang on, I gotta draw a line somewhere, man.
I was also a fan of
the Kings. Cut his mic, Lance. Cut his mic. There we
Burger
go.
Burger King
the
jersey
fish
too.
Sticks.
I was, what's that? I was a fan of all the Kings Burger King jersey too, the one that everybody made fun of. I liked it.
No, that one was ugly.
I don't mind
really?
It.
Really? You dug it?
Yeah. I didn't mind it at all. There was another one. One of the Ducks ones where the duck is like breaking out of the ice. I like that one too.
That's awful. Oh man.
See? God. I'm good with it.
This is just a generation gap maybe happening between us or quality gap happening between us. He's choosing some really hideous jerseys here. You know what's good with the old Bruins with the bear logo? I like that one.
That good. Or the Nashville Predators, the puke yellow ones with big saber-tooth tiger on the front. That
Hang
one
on.
Wasn't
you
good.
Didn't, you didn't
Color
like
scheme wasn't good.
You didn't like the Bruins jerseys with the bear on them?
Not really.
Listen, dude.
There's a real disconnect here, Jeff.
I'd agree with you if you were right. Trust me, man. you're just wrong. I think so. Anyway, we got some Lance back at Master there. If you can put some pink paper in the fax machine for Maddie, and put the new job opening up online to produce a snappy little 2-hour hockey program, that would be wonderful. Well, what else are you wrong? What else are you wrong about today, Maddie?
Okay, so this I can't be wrong about because I don't have an opinion as of yet. I'm going to wait for yours before I say anything. So you were talking about Jack Campbell and his next contract. So I have some comparables for you. So I'm going to try and run through the list here. Elvis Merzlikins, contract extension kicks in next year, 5 at 5.4. Semyon Varlamov, 4 years at 5 per. He's a UFA after next season. DA mentioned Robin Leonard, 5 years, 5 per. This one's an interesting one as well because the extension kicked in this year. UC Saros, 5 years, 5 per. Linus Ullmark, 4 years, 5 per. Grubauer, 5 years, 5.9 per. Yeah. Jordan Binnick didn't. It's around the $5 to $6 million range because I don't know. I can't go any higher than John Gibson at and Campbell's not going to get 8 years at 6.4, but I think 6.4 is probably the top end right now. To me, I'm not going higher than Gibson.
Yeah, I know that, you know, in the offices of the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, they're, you know, the idea of paying, you know, $5 million to Jack Campbell may seem beyond the pale, but doesn't that seem like the obvious number here, whether it's Merzlikins or Varlamov or Cal Peterson or UC Saros? I mean, okay, Saros kind of led that team to the playoffs last year and said, hey, get on my back. But I don't know. That kind of seems like the sweet spot. And don't forget, too, the other thing about this with Jack Campbell, okay, like Jack Campbell goes into these negotiations with one thing in his hip pocket. He's an unrestricted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is just the marketplace. He's not an RFA. He is a UFA. You're buying UFA years here. I don't know. If I'm Kyle Dubas and I can get him under $5 million, whew, awesome. Win.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening. I don't care how, like you said to DA, he's in a position now where this may be the last chance for him to make like a real splash here. And if I'm Jack Campbell, I don't care how much I like the market, you got to pay me. And I do think that part of it is there is a hindrance on the Maple Leafs because of what they're paying Peter Mrazek right now. Like $3.8 million for a guy that has made, what, two starts? And he's hurt. He's been hurt twice. So that's a problem that they have here. And Jack Campbell, I mean, it feels like every time he starts a game that price just continues to go up. I know there's a limit on what he will be paid, even on the open market. Because like I said, I don't see him getting more than $6 million, right? But there is a number that he wants and he should probably get, especially the way he's played.
I can't see him getting six. It's honestly, it hovers around five. It really does. 11 games tonight, Maddie. Ducks Hurricanes is the one for me. That is a 10 o'clock Eastern start. That's the game of the night. Although you can make noise about the Oilers and the Jets. I mean, we saw what Winnipeg did to Edmonton a couple of nights ago. Stuart Skinner, by the way, gets a start for the Oilers. We saw what happened with Mikko Koskinen in the game a couple of nights ago. He was leaking pucks. That's the Koskinen that many point to and say, there's the guy. And that's why, with the Mike Smith injury coupled, the Oilers have a goaltending issue right now. So you can make some noise about that one. I think Tampa and Philly should be a good game as well. The Rangers and the Maple Leafs, two teams on four-game winning streaks. Which one or which ones of all the games tonight capture your attention?
Edmonton Winnipeg really gets my attention just because anytime you know, the two really good Canadian teams, but just two really good teams in general. I mean, Winnipeg was talked about as, you know, up there with Toronto and Edmonton and probably better in a lot of cases heading into this season. And mm-hmm. I love watching Kyle Connor play. I think he's so good and so underrated as a goal scorer in this league, which is crazy because all he does is score.
Most 5-on-5 goals of anyone in the NHL this season, last time I checked, Kyle Connor.
Yeah, so he's kind of good. And obviously the two other guys, I can't remember their names. I think it's McDavid and Draisaitl on the other side are always really good. And the last time that the Leafs and Rangers played each other, that game went into overtime, and it was a blast to watch those two teams play.
You know,
like Shesterkin stood on his head. He was incredible that game. I'm looking forward to that again.
Yeah, you know, the thing about that last time these two teams met, and it was after that loss at the Maple Leafs, was they lost three more after that, like in quick succession, with San Jose, Pittsburgh, and Carolina. Leafs dominated that game. Like, that was a game that the Rangers really shouldn't have had any business being in, but Shesterkin was just that good.
And one of the better overtimes we've seen all year.
That was a fun overtime. That's one of the things I was talking to DA about. Watch the Rangers. They're leaky. They give up a lot of chances, and they rely on Shesterkin a ton. Great stuff, Maddie, even though your choice of jerseys are awful. Thanks to David Amber from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada for stopping by. Thomas Drantz from the Canucks Hour and The Athletic. And we kicked it off with Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 32 Thoughts. Thanks for joining me. Back tomorrow. Rest of your day. You're free. Go ahead. Go have your day.